Hello everyone, I'm Tara. And continuing with our discussion on service management, let's touch on a very, very important aspect from a logistics distribution point of view, which is the service location and distribution. Now, one is the very literal aspect of it, that of course, you know, if I'm a provider of goods and services, then I want to strategically have my locations, whether it's manufacturing units, whether it's my distributor network, so that I can eventually, produce in an efficient manner at the lowest cost, and then supply at the lowest transport cost to my eventual customer. And also, then ensure timeliness and customer satisfaction. But when we delve into more of location strategy, you'll see how it is not simply only as literal in terms of physical, distribution, which of course is a very important part. And we'll see that through various examples and case studies, whether that is Amul, whether that is, other industries. But there are even in the digital world, how localization plays a role. Because remember, today we are an offline and online world. So we have to holistically consider both when we are talking about the distribution strategy of a company. So, companies have to very strategically figure out what is the objective, what are we trying to achieve. You have to, when you are deciding on a location, it's not simply a matter of cost and profitability and timeliness that I've mentioned. It's a matter of regulation. It's a matter of cultural preferences. It's a matter of currencies. It's a matter of weather, environment. All of these elements come in and get factored into identifying a service location. Now, talking about this, how it becomes very, very important, whether it is about maintenance of existing facilities or expanding your facilities, newer facilities. So for example, let's talk about first touch on the digital world. We've all heard of Airbnb. Some of us may have used it also, which is a bread and breakfast method. Now, when Airbnb started, first of all, there was a massive gap and demand. If you travel to another country, where would you stay? At a hotel? Hostel culture is now catching on among the youth, but Indians typically, other than the youth, don't really stay at hostels overseas. You have no choice but to stay at a hotel unless you're staying with a relative or a friend or something. Now, hotels, even budget hotels, are extremely expensive in parts of the world. So, over and above your flying cost, for anyone traveling, especially from a personal point of view, from a non-business point of view, just the cost of stay completely magnified your entire budget. And a lot of people could not travel internationally because hotel prices were absolutely exorbitant when you converted it even for the budget category. So, and especially when you're traveling with families where obviously there are many people. So now comes Airbnb. And what Airbnb is that people across the world offer up, properties. Either they have a vacant property or they have a property where there is a vacant room, and they offer up these properties at rates which are lesser than hotel rates, or rooms which are lesser than hotel rates. Because, for example, if I'm booking a hotel room versus if I'm staying in the room of someone who has a spare room to share, then obviously they're going to charge me less versus the luxury of a hotel. Now, why was there a demand for it? Demand because I'm looking for something budget, demand because, and supply because people are looking for additional revenue. If there is a service and if I can, offer up my free space, then that is additional revenue for me. But it's not simply about having vacant space. There are so many other elements. How will I monetize it? How will the payment work? What about the safety? Who am I letting into my home? Or rather, whose home am I going into? Currency conversions. How How will I verify? How will I showcase? How will I maintain my privacy? So factoring in all of these things into the design element, Airbnb used localization in a very significant manner. So for example, Airbnb is available, you know, there when you go to their website and for different countries, it's available in 26 languages. And to create, so you have Airbnb for India, a landing page, you have Airbnb for, you know, various parts of the Western world, you have, you know, across the globe. So when you are, you have the landing pages, Airbnb teams worked with local people, local photographers, local content creators, you know, local logistics people to create these local pages where people who go on to these can use them in a very user-friendly way in a language that is comfortable for them. Get a visual experience which is as familiar to them as possible. So all of these elements came into the picture. A currency conversion was taken into account. You know, regulation is taken into account. Various other elements are taken into account. And from the time that it was launched in 2007, it's a huge success. And a lot of people who are first-time travelers internationally would travel primarily because of Airbnb and, you know, what they made possible because of travel. So, for example, when I used Airbnb in 2014, the cities which I was traveling to, even a basic budget hotel would have cost upward of 100 euros per night, which in today's time is close to, you know, 9,500-10,000 rupees. Whereas a centrally located Airbnb, which is a room with an ensuite washroom, you know, which I was renting in the heart of the cities, were up to 30 euros a night. So that was something which made travel possible. Otherwise, you know, it was not. And not only this 100 euros in terms of budget, but also 100 euros in terms of distance from the city center. Now, when you're a traveler, a lot of the your expenses become, you know, taxis, etc. Private taxis world over are extremely expensive. So if you are staying away from the city center, you become very dependent on private transport. If you are staying more in the city center, then you, if you are well researched, then you can use the local transport, the local buses, the metro, all of those. So staying in the city center for 30 euro versus stay a night versus staying away from the city center for 100 euros a night, then paying for your transport to travel and see all the attractions, it would have been absolutely impossible if Airbnb had not been there. And despite being a first timer, despite not knowing technology very well, the whole payment system, the coordination with the hosts, everything worked very seamlessly. And now, keeping in mind safety from both sides, you know, they have reviews on me. They can assess me. There are verifications. I am seeing reviews on them. So they have a Airbnb has a concept called super hosts, you know, who have got phenomenal reviews, the number of reviews, and these are legitimate, verified, you know, people who are writing about their experiences, all of those factors. How many people have they hosted? So, you know, is there someone who's like started new? Then maybe they'll take a little bit of time to become, you know, trusted versus someone who has 200, you know, testimonials and reviews and has a very good rating. So there are so many options. And now if you think even in India, in Mumbai, and in other large parts of, you know, around the country, Airbnb is very, very popular in India as well. So not only is it working for international travel, it's also working for domestic travel. And whereas in India, you didn't really have the culture of letting out a part of your, you know, a room for, you know, short-term rentals for travelers and tourists on a payment basis. Now it's a very respectable and legitimate and safe thing to do. Of course, you have to have your wits about you. There are strange incidents reported every now and then. But, you know, that is, you know, unfortunately, the dark side of any industry. So these, all of these things have made, have come about as a result of an online location strategy and keeping in mind all of those locational specific things when it comes to cultures. So for example, there was an Airbnb that someone was looking to rent in Mumbai. And when they, you know, checked it, in the features itself, it was listed that if you stay at this Airbnb, you cannot have alcohol, you cannot have non-veg. And that's a cultural thing, but very clear, transparent, so that there is no confusion that tomorrow someone turns up out there and there's an issue, you know. Also, now while I'm talking about the success of Airbnb, let me also put it, compare it with Couchsurfing. Now, Couchsurfing is also an online, you know, global stay system, which started way before Airbnb did. But the model was different. It was not really monetized initially. It was more to do with, you know, people traveling and the idea being that if I host, if you visit my country, I host you. And if I visit your country, you host me. So, you know, that is how it is. And, you know, people open up their homes for couch surfing, etc. Now, they did not, it was more of an informal idea which caught on. And of course, there are very active couch surfing communities all over the world still, but they did not move the way Airbnb did. They, when they caught on that, you know, their market is being, you know, eaten into, they tried to move up the curve, technological upgradations. Suddenly they moved from a non-monetized platform to a monetized platform. So people who were on couch surfing because it is free, it was free, you know, were quite disappointed that it's become a monetized platform. So they have lost out and they're still around, but there's no comparison between where Airbnb is in terms of service quality and where Couchsurfing is. And of course, location, being sensitive to location, keep factoring in all these locational aspects of, you know, language, local content, tie up with local people, currency arrangements, all of those, all of these things have helped Airbnb reach where it is today. Then let's take another example, Coke. So Coke has been around since 1886. It's there in 200 countries. Now, when we talk about Coke, let's take another example and look at a manufacturing business, Coke, which has been around since 1886. The, you know, largest beverage producer and marketer in the world. They are present in 200 countries. Now, if we talk purely in terms of their website, it's their website has been visited billions of times. Okay. Now, what they do is that in the interest of locational advantage, they host their servers on local domains. So it is very easy for people to navigate and reach the landing page and site of their local country, which is in local language, which is more familiar to them, and which makes it easier for customers to you know, use their site and get around their site. So once again, Coke has used location strategy in terms of the speed, in terms of the localization of the language, in terms of the content you see when you land on that country's page. So for example, if someone in Germany visits the Coke Germany page, then they will probably see the company there, you know, supporting the LGBTQ movement, because culturally that is something important to the country there. And they are visiting the site which is hosted on the local German domain servers. Likewise, if someone goes onto the site from Italy, they are going to see, you know, a bunch of kids having pizza. So it's all very localized in terms of the content you find, the familiarity you find, and this is also a locational advantage. Now, coming from the online world to the physical world, let's take the example of a large retailer like H&M, which is the clothing and accessories store, primarily clothing brand that we are familiar with, and we have outlets of that in India as well. Now, they are, for H&M, they have presence in 75 countries, and they have more than 5,000 stores. Now, they have a very efficient system of inventory management. They try to be, in terms of locations, in terms of their warehousing, in terms of the designs they offer in different countries, they try to be as much in sync with the local requirements. So over and above just inventory management and timeliness in terms of delivery or access to their stores, you know, with 5,000 stores, you can imagine they're fairly widely accessible. You can also purchase from the website. You have, over and above just this, they have a very interesting system where they have a loyalty card. Now, what they do is with that, with the use of that loyalty card, they analyze the data which they get on the loyalty cards, which gives them patterns of what the customers, how the customers are purchasing, what are they purchasing. And this data is analyzed in a very detailed manner and gives them ideas of locational purchase preferences, buying patterns, etc. And then they effectively respond to that. So you have locational advantages which have helped H&M excel. Whereas, you know, we've recently, very recently, Forever 21 has announced that they are shutting down. So it's really a matter of, in these dynamic times, in these times when costs are skyrocketing, we had these few years of pandemic, which, you know, a lot of entities and individuals are unable to recover from that. All of these things put together, who is staying up the curve and managing to survive and thrive versus entities which have, you know, a lot of challenges and have not been able to beat the competition. So when you're expanding to new markets and new markets, you have to think about a lot of other factors. You have to think about raw materials. You know, very often when we're talking about, when we've had chapters and discussions where we are talking about sourcing of raw materials, especially dependency on exports. For example, a lot of the industries where we have dependency in terms of fuel, coal imports, etc. We have seen how you have cost which goes through the roof, because your cost, input cost, goes through the roof, and hence having locational advantage is very, very important, even from a raw material point of view. Or for example, if there's an industry which is based on skill, so when you have the diamond processing industry in India, where is it? The Surat, you know, is the hub of the diamond processing industry. Now, maximum number of skilled personnel would be there. So if someone decides to, you know, have carry out this business elsewhere, they would probably also have relative scarcity in terms of the skilled manpower forces. So not only is it in terms of the raw materials, but it is also in terms of the accessibility to skilled manpower. Now, obviously, when we talk about back-end BPO outsourcing, which is a very, very big business for India, telemarketing, etc., a lot of these centers are based in India. Now, the staff managing this, servicing this, the locational advantage cannot be replicated elsewhere with a similar kind of labor cost, with a similar kind of IT skill, with a similar kind of you know, various other skills which are required. So location comes into the process chain of service delivery right from the raw material point of view, not just from a delivery point of view. So all of these elements have to go into the decisions for you know, where your locations along the process, along your life cycle of the product or service will be based. Now, when you are expanding, then people will expand only, you know, or move elsewhere where there's an attractive alternative. Every time you're making a commitment to a location, especially in the physical world, it is a long-term commitment. Location is something, when you buy an apartment, you get committed to it for a long time. 2 months down the line, you're not satisfied with it. 6 months down the line, you're not satisfied with it. Your family is fully settled. It's not something you change all the time, right? I mean, you're leasing a space, that's different. Even there, the contracts are you know, stringent. You can't walk in and out because no one's going to want that kind of uncertainty. So when it comes to switching location, it's not something you can do overnight. It's not something that you can do very easily. There are costs involved with that. There's a lot of effort, and there's a lot of hence a lot of inertia with being able to do that. So you have to keep all of these aspects in mind when you are talking about when you are evaluating rather a location alternative, because it's not simply a matter of better real estate prices. There are a lot of other elements, you know, shifting your staff. Are you close enough to your customers? Are you close enough to your raw material? Will you be able to hire the right kind of local talent? All of these elements are going to go into the picture when you look at alternatives for your location. Alternatives, moving from one to the other is not effortless, comes with a cost, comes with an effort, comes with a pain value, psychological. Very often we have, staff leaving who they say, well, our company is moving and we can't really move to that other location. So we are moving and looking for another job. So a lot of these things, moving from one location to the other, are not as overnight and seamless and require a lot of effort. Various motivations are there for why businesses are located where they are. So for example, you have Kenna Metal, in the machine industry. And they are located as close to highways and flyovers, because that is, they need access to quick transport and to get to the highways, etc., to be able to reach their customers quickly would be difficult. So they are located close enough. Likewise, you have AT&T Wireless. For various financial considerations, they have chosen to be in areas of penetration which bring them the most advantage. Now you also have a BHP Billiton, which is choosing to be located, where the clients are the steel industry, where they have chosen to be stationed as close to the client locations as possible. So there are various elements from cost point of view, from accessibility point of view, from the supply point of view, which can influence why you choose a certain location. Now let's talk about a positive case which has worked very well. So we are all familiar with the Anglo-Dutch company Levers, Unilever, and their Indian subsidiary is Hindustan Levers, HUL. And as per the last estimate, they had revenues of about 63,000 crores. So you know how big they are. Now, they are supplying all over the country, even in the interiors. In fact, they are a case study at the top MBA colleges when it comes to rural marketing and rural supply. So how are they achieving this? They have a very, very large network of over 3,500 distributors, tie-ups. They have their Samadhan centers, which make timely delivery possible. They have a lot of, local communities where that is how their supply system works. HUL has really taken their motto of winning in many Indias to a very, very micro level. When it comes to servicing the absolute local rural areas also, they are able to do it very effectively. They have applied a lot of models where they have managed to bring down their delivery time to the retail outlets from 3 days to 24, less than 24 hours. So they are really getting their locational strategy, their distribution strategy right. They have this concept of think global, act local. And they take in the entire local ecosystem into account, whether it is through distribution networks, whether it is through their Samadhan centers, whether it is through their various mobile apps that they have. Then they also have local, rural, grassroots levels of delegation that they do to these local ammas. And through those, They are servicing the entire country, and I think a lot of people at the rural level probably don't even realize that Unilever is an international entity because they associate all of those with their local community. It is present at such a micro level. Also, they had this implemented Project Symphony. Now, even though they are top of the game, they are they have such an extensive network. They have such a good reputation for customer service and delivery and such a huge market space. Yet they are constantly endeavoring for improvements. And they also implemented Project Symphony, which brought in significant improvements, significant bottom line impact. So once again, stressing that it is not simply a matter of getting your excelling currently, but it is also a matter of staying innovative and alert to what the business climate is, what the customer requirement is, so that you can deliver on that and respond to that. Now, let's talk about Amul. Amul, which was started in 1946, basically there was a lot of exploitation of the milk producers by the middlemen. So Amul came up as a cooperative movement in Gujarat and in Anand in Gujarat, and the idea being that this cooperative tiered system will eliminate the exploitation by the middleman and yet work effectively. And Amul has this fabulous system in terms of over 16 million milk producers contributing to the whole Amul endeavor. They are supplying to more than 1 million retail outlets. Their milk is being supplied to more than 1 million retail outlets, and they are also exporting their products to over 15 million countries. So that is how this whole Amul story has grown. We know Amul from the ads we see. Of course, we may be consuming Amul products as I do regularly. And if you see, they have also started coming with these not just the 1 liter tetra packs, but also these 200 liter tetra packs. Now, again, from a location, from a grassroots point of view, that's a very good strategy in terms of responding to consumers who may not consume very large amounts. And then, of course, being a perishable product, it could lose its value soon. So they have responded with a product and a quantity which is more attractive to the consumer. So there are so many of these, aspects which come into play when we are talking about locational advantage and the importance of service location. Now, a lot of these selection factors we have discussed, the competitive positioning, flexibility, various elements. Now, while we are talking about all these success stories, there are also locational sagas which have not turned out that well for companies. So, for example, when Home Depot started in China. Now, Home Depot is more of a DIY, do-it-yourself kind of concept. And when Home Depot went to China, unfortunately, they flopped pretty badly in China because China was just not ready for the concept of DIY at that point of time. So, the location in terms of having a customer, having a market, sales market and a customer, segment, it was not a location strategy where it worked out for them. So there are a lot of elements which are going into this. We're talking about behavioral, cultural, like, for example, China was not ready for a DIY. And then, of course, we have elements of raw material, various other things where non-behavioral elements come into play and the decision-making process as far as your location selection is concerned. And errors can fall in either of these categories when things have not turned out well from a location strategy point of view. So location planning over and above just the infrastructure and the tangible aspects of customer, raw material, sales, etc. Also have aspects of climate. which impact. So obviously, especially when it comes, for example, to let's say look at the winemaking industry in India. So when you think about some of what is the, when you think about the wine district of India, the way you have Napa Valley in California or Sonoma Valley in California, which are known for Californian vines, and a valley region is a good region for is a good climatic region for grape production and wine, hence wine making, to have it on location so that you're not transporting grapes, which is not exactly a great idea. In India, it is the Nashik Valley. So we are all familiar with Nashik, the not just Sula, you have Sula, you have Soma, you have so many other wine making entities, companies that are in Nashik. And of course, Sula has become, a game changer when it comes to the wine industry in India. The way they have marketed that produce internationally, the way they have promoted the wine drinking culture in India itself, the way they have brought in international partnership, not just from a funding point of view, but also from the point of view of investment and stakeholdership and in terms of exporting. So we are familiar with Sula in India, and they have various budget categories. But a lot of what we don't know is that a lot of the Sula produce goes internationally and is served as very high-end wine in fine dining restaurants across the globe. So now here, location planning was very important, because the founder, when I was reading one of his interviews, Rajiv Samant, he mentioned that they had land in Nashik, ancestral land in Nashik, and the family business was in some ball bearings or some manufacturing element, nothing to do with wine at all. But he saw an opportunity there where he realized that it is an area which is very conducive to grape produce. And being just about 3 to 4 hours, 3.5, 4 hours drive from Mumbai, and now even shorter now, you have a supply, you have a market, a consumer market just within 3 to 4 hours, which has a very large consumption for your captive consumption for your produce, for your product. So the climate is working, the proximity is working, and of course the rest is history. When you visit the Sula vineyard, visitors can go to their tasting room, they can get a wine tasting tour which takes you through the entire process of right from the growth of the grapes. They will take you to the lines of the, they'll take you to the vineyards, they will take you through the various processes, to the eventual tasting, and you realize how that climate has worked well, and how that locational advantage, which initially within Maharashtra and to Mumbai, but then once the brand caught on, that has of course taken off, and all over, not just the country, the world, it is being supplied. Now, likewise, you have Grover wines, which are more in Bangalore. So again, when it comes to a lot of the strategic planning, when it comes to products, location analysis, service quality, having the right climate also becomes that much more important when it comes to these decisions.